Welcome to the GoTo Podcast. Each episode covers the brightest and boldest ideas from the world's leading experts in software development. Tune in for practical lessons, compelling theories, and plenty of inspiration. GoTo gathers the brightest minds in the software community to help developers tackle projects today, plan for tomorrow, and create a better future. Stay up to date with the latest in tech through GoTo's top-rated events held online and in person in cities like Amsterdam, London, Copenhagen, and Chicago, and by subscribing to the GoTo Conferences YouTube channel, where you can find thousands more high-quality dev talks. Learn more at gotopia.tech.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to this chat I'm going to be having with Keith Morris. First, I'll quickly introduce myself. My name is Abby Bangzer. I'm a principal engineer at Syntasso, where we're building an open source framework called Cradix to help people build their internal platforms in a faster, safer, and more efficient way. And I've had the pleasure of not just working with Keith, but being friends with Keith for over the last decade. And I'm so excited to have seen that his third edition of his book has come out. But for those that may not be as familiar, Keith, would you mind introducing yourself to everybody?
Sure. Yeah. So I, as you know, work at ThoughtWorks. We worked together, you know, on a couple of projects in the past before you moved on to where you are now. Yeah. So I've worked at ThoughtWorks the past 15 years. I'm based in London, although I'm originally, as are you, Abby, from the US. We're both kind of transplants to the UK. Yeah. And so I've worked with infrastructure as code as kind of a user for ages, since probably around the very early 2000s with like CF Engine I started out with, and then Puppet and Chef and so on. And then as cloud and DevOps and continuous delivery and all this stuff emerged, I was just basically really into that stuff. And so I guess the thing I'm known for is I wrote the book Infrastructure as Code, which is published by O'Reilly. And yeah, as I said, it's the third edition, just came out. So that's my jam right now.
There are things that can make you feel older or younger, different ages. And I feel like the fact that I was sitting in a client cafeteria with you almost exactly 10 years ago, I think maybe 9.5-ish years ago, yeah, as you were putting the final touches on that first edition. It makes it crazy to me that you're onto your third edition, that it's been 10 years and all that. And it just makes me think how that's both a blink of an eye and also a lifetime when it comes to software and technology and all the changes. So I guess I'd be curious if I had fallen asleep after lunch that day and woken up in 2025, you know, 10 years later, do you think I would be surprised? What do you think would surprise me? What do you think would look familiar to me 10 years on from that?
That's a good question. Good way to put it. I mean, I think the things that have changed a lot are, back then we focused a lot on the server configuration that was around, you know, provisioning operating systems and configuring them. So Chef and Puppet and those kind of things were the main thing, and CloudFormation and Terraform were out and starting to be used, but that was kind of the newer thing. So like the first edition had a mix of those. I think the subtitle was something about servers on the cloud. And so, yeah, it's obviously gotten a lot more. I think probably one of the more interesting things is the, you know, is containerization and all of that. So we're a lot less focused on, again, the operating system level stuff, although it's still there. And there are a lot of places where people, like, they're still doing that. They're still building the virtual machines and the physical servers and all that, and using these things for that. But yeah, I think the whole containerization thing and all that is kind of, that's exploded and really changed the landscape. And then I think also just like the amount of stuff that people are doing with it and the complexity of what's being built, because back in those days, it was still a little bit niche. It was still, you know, most kind of, companies that have been around for a while, you know, because like, so we work, it was in a bank, right? And it was like, and they'd been, you know, I think that was even like a couple hundred year old type bank here in the UK. Like the start of what was being done with infrastructure as code was fairly small scale. And even like startups and internet, you know, digital natives, it was still fairly small. And I think just like the proliferation of stuff, proliferation of what you get is available to you on a cloud platform, the different services and stuff that's available and the different kind of tools and things. It's just gotten more and more and more. And so I think I don't think that would necessarily be anything that kind of surprised you in terms of the nature of what it was, but just like the amount of it might be a bit shocking.
Yeah, you're so right. The kind of complexity of what we do with it, and that move from that cattle to pets, or pets to cattle, the other direction that we often talk about, that idea that when we were first starting, going into infrastructure as code, the industry, when I say we, the royal we, a lot of the things that we were thinking about orchestrating were things that were long lived. They were things that need to be updated over time. And then in those first kind of couple of years, we worked across a number of clients together. We saw a lot more of that move from pets, those things you had to take care of for a long time that each had their own literal names that you knew well, they had their own personalities, into that idea of cattle, that idea of something that lives for a short time, that can be replaced, and so forth, as horrific as that seems as a metaphor. But do you think that with that with that changing of the way we work with infrastructure, not infrastructure as code per se, but with infrastructure, that move from servers to containers, from containers to serverless, to functions as a service and edge compute and all those things. Do you think that infrastructure as code as a model has been able to kind of keep up with the architectural pressures that are kind of coming in on the requirements?
Yeah, because I think it's like layers, isn't it? Layers of kind of abstraction that have been built up. And part of the thing, even like with the early, like with virtualization and a kind of cloud in that basic sense, the idea is kind of like, okay, I'm worrying less around the stuff, you know, the tin and the wires and stuff. And so that stuff can kind of come and go. And I'm worried now about like the conceptual. So the virtual server is this kind of thing that sits and I don't really care where it is, right? And then like containers, now I don't care what server the container image is running in. And then when it's serverless, like I don't even necessarily care about the container, you know? And so, yeah, I think the kind of the piling of stuff is it's a big mess, right? And there's a lot to it. And where I think that there's been kind of a lot of stuff lately, like people writing articles and stuff around infrastructure as code is dead or what's next and that kind of stuff. And I think it's all valid just in the sense that like it is hard, especially with the tools that we currently have. So the infrastructure as code tools that are out there, the way they approach this doesn't really, I think it's still, in a way, I almost kind of, I use this phrase, snowflakes as code, right? Which is just the idea that like you take like some code, like Terraform code or CDK or whatever it might be, and you kind of use it to define an environment, but then it's still kind of static. Like there's that one environment and here's the code for the environment. And when you need another environment, okay, I'm going to copy the code and I'm going to tweak it. And so you're kind of maintaining all the code for these things. And it's very low level. So infrastructure code, when you look at it, it's really like a thin wrapper over the APIs of these clouds, right? So the things that you define in Terraform are just like, well, there's an EC2 instance, there's a subnet, there's this. It's all like very, you know, it is super low level stuff. And it's just getting harder and harder to work at that level. And so, yeah, there's been a lot of people are out there thinking about how to improve on that. And I think some of them are looking at things like, so there's like the language thing of like, okay, maybe if you use like a regular programming language rather than a declarative language, it might make things easier. I think that still ends up being, you're still writing code that is dealing with the low level infrastructure. So you still have to deal with that. There's some cool stuff coming out, the likes of like System Initiative and Config Hub and so on, where they're looking at like, what if we do away with code and having code sitting in GitHub? And if we look at like the data structures that represent our infrastructure. And so I think the emphasis, like if you look at System Initiative, if you haven't, folks, I'd recommend giving it a, you know, looking it up and having a look. It's from the, you know, the founder, Adam Jacob founded Chef, and he's kind of moved on to this and with some other folks who are building this cool stuff. And the emphasis, like you look at it and it's like, oh, it's like GUI stuff. I'm good doing drag and drop. But like, I think that actually that's kind of just like the superficial thing that what's interesting is that it's like the data structures and the models of stuff where like with something like Terraform, we have state files, right? And the state file represents, we run our infrastructure code and then it gets turned into a model in memory of the tool of like, there's the desired state. And then that gets, you know, the state file kind of is some data structures that represent what it thinks the state of the real infrastructure is and that try to reconcile all of that. And that whole loop is what gets messy. And so they're saying, what if we just take those data structures and we just kind of work on that and we expose those and make it, you know, so it's still, you can write code that's kind of programmatic and generates data structures or reacts to changes in data structures. And so it creates some really interesting opportunities, I think. But I think there again, I think as useful as that is for maybe moving beyond some of the limitations of infrastructure as code, I think the real issue is around those kind of levels of abstraction of what are we working with? How are we thinking about it? So if I'm a developer and I'm trying to deploy some software or define like, what does my software need? You know, I don't really want to have to use to wire up the really low level, you know, networking structures to be able to make connections in and out of it. I just want to say, I need a connection from the internet. It needs to be secure. And so it doesn't matter really whether you're using a declarative language or a programmable language, or even like, you know, you have a kind of GUI interface to help you manage that stuff. Still working with that low level stuff is kind of a pain. And so it's, how do we bundle up with whatever tools we use? So my kind of take on is infrastructure as code, whether it's dead, is like, maybe it is, maybe it isn't. It kind of doesn't matter. It's like the changes that we need to make in how we abstract infrastructure and manage it and to automate it and everything like that. I think that's, you know, we can use different tools for how we build those abstractions and those will evolve. And I don't know which direction it's going to go.
You're supposed to have the magic ball, the magic, you know, globe there. It's super interesting. You had a few really interesting threads there, but I think where we sort of wrapped up was the conversation around the abstractions of infrastructure as code. And one of the things that always goes through my mind when I'm talking with you or with anyone about this is like, is it okay for something to be really powerful in the domain that it is really powerful and not have to grow up? So like, one of my favorite kind of analogies for this is the floating platforms. I think the complete word from Gregor Hope, but you can think about floating anything where we are perpetually commoditizing things. We see this in the idea of like Wardley mapping, where things are not static. They move along an evolution from innovative through to becoming commodities in the market. And if you were to say to somebody 50 years ago that, you know, power cycling of the data center and cooling of the data center is not going to mean anything in 50 years to 99% of people in technology, like, that would be surprising in some ways to some people. But actually, like, there are 99% don't even think about that on a daily basis, but there is still that 1% that still does. Like, we are still running on someone's machine somewhere. The things that help with data center management are still powerful and still run the world. They just do so from below a certain line of visibility. And so I wonder, when it comes to infrastructure as code and this sort of changing needs. So the changing needs from like, there is infrastructure that is very low level, the EC2, the, you know, service accounts, the VPCs and those things. And there is infrastructure that is more conceptual, the test environment, the, you know, staging environment, the application and its dependencies and so forth. Do you see that infrastructure as code fits better or worse in those different domain models? Do you think that one of the challenges is just trying to shoehorn in the same tools to work across domain mentalities? And actually, that's why we're seeing this break in tooling, is like different problem spaces?
So I think there's a couple of things. So one is like the as code thing, which doesn't have to be about infrastructure necessarily, right? So like, we can define all the things as code. We can define our pipelines as code. And so I think when we talk about infrastructure as code, we're often talking about specific tools. And like I was saying before, like, they tend to be the tools that are working at those low level resources that are exposed by the infrastructure platform or the cloud platform or whatever. I think the challenge we're seeing is that, yeah, we're trying to build those higher levels of abstraction on top of it, but using the same tools and the same mentality. And I think that's where I think some of the issues are. And where some of the interesting stuff is how do you kind of then interface, or how can you like make, maybe you still write low level components using code, infrastructure as code as we know it now, but you write it in a way that's more kind of, I don't know, reusable, you know, that and that kind of thing. And then maybe there's a different kind of abstraction level on top for things like, as you say, environments. How do I define what's in my QA environment? And the language that I use for that might be quite different, because the person using it can be quite different. I think that's one of the key things, actually, with all of this, is thinking about who are these for? Because with infrastructure as code, I think the mentality is still pretty much that the user of this is like an infrastructure person. It's somebody who knows infrastructure deeply and knows how to connect up subnets and routing tables and all that kind of thing. And so I think when a lot of times with the tools, when they're trying to kind of appeal to, say, developers and say, oh, we're going to provide you with this kind of level of abstraction, they're still kind of doing it in a way that is like really suited for those, you know, for systems administration types. And I think that's what's got to change. We got to think about who's using these things at which level, and then what do they need to know? Another thing I wanted to kind of say, just because we're talking about the abstraction layers, something I always think about with that is that it's important to, abstraction shouldn't kind of hide and make it accessible to stuff below it, right? Yeah. Like, you often need to know that, right? So you might need to know things about your, you know, the power in your data center or whatever, or the power usage maybe of the things that you're doing. What's the impact? Martin Thompson wrote ages and ages and ages ago a post on mechanical sympathy, right? Which is just this idea of like, as you're writing at these levels, these higher levels of stuff with like, he was using examples of Java code. It's really useful to understand what's going on underneath. And so he gave some examples of like understanding the CPU architecture and like how big are the caches so that when you think about defining your variables in Java, like there's ways that you can do it that will really, can really optimize. And in some cases you need to know that and some you don't. So I think of abstraction as being about, it's kind of like cognitive, not cognitive load, that's like a popular phrase these days, but like the cognitive kind of scope. Like I want to focus on the business problem, so I want to be able to work at that. I want to focus on the environment, defining what do I need to test to deploy and test my application. So I want to talk about that and think about that. I want to be able to switch down if like suddenly like, oh, there's a performance issue. And so I need to kind of thunk down and look at, okay, what's going on, you know, with those networking things. I want to have the ability to do that. I just don't want to have to do it when I don't want to.
I don't want to yet. And that's a really interesting concept I've been looking into a bit in the platform space around the, there's a term called like progressive discovery, I think is the term, I think. And it is an idea of the idea that you should be able to do the easy thing easily without having to worry about all the stuff. But the idea that over time, you're going to grow in your needs. You're going to grow in your customizations and in your optimizations and things like that. And so you can progressively get deeper and more integrated into things. But I think that's a really interesting challenge when it comes to anything is code or anything is design abstractions and APIs. Like, how do you create that in a sustainable way? So I guess maybe this is more of a tactical question than we often get into when it comes to infrastructure as code, but do you think about with your clients and with your book and so forth, any of those kind of conversations of how to do progressively, someone wants to start with a small database, but over time they want to be able to optimize that database in more aggressive ways or more kind of complete ways. How does that work when you're designing and architecting an infrastructure as code system?
Yeah, it's a good question. I do talk about that a bit. So I talk in the book about application-driven development, and that's just the idea of starting with your thinking about the application, what does it need, and then designing down. So I think that's part of it. And then I think what we're talking about is probably like the kind of incremental, so the slices. And so like, so you and I have done this when we were on a, you know, another project that we were on, we did this thing where we were like trying to build out, you know, make a roadmap basically of building out all the infrastructure that was needed for an organization that was going to the cloud for the first time. I'm doing their development and deployment and delivery in the cloud. And like the idea there was like to try to, rather than kind of like mapping out, here's all the things we're going to need and, you know, to be done. And so then building those out in some, you know, it's what's the first kind of task that we would like to be able to do. And then what is the minimum amount of infrastructure that we need to do to implement that? And even for some of that infrastructure, are there simpler implementations? So it's like, I think I remember in that case, it was like there was an aspiration, they wanted to use Prometheus for monitoring. And we're like, okay, that's cool. It's going to take a while to build that, right? From scratch and build out all the infrastructure to host it and all that. So let's start out in our first iterations with using CloudWatch because it was on AWS. And it's like, we can get that up and running more quickly so we can get to the point where we're deploying an application in a simple way, a simple application that maybe then the first time, you know, the first instance doesn't need a database. So we're going to, you know, what's the simplest slice that we can start with? Because the infrastructure always just kind of balloons out. Like even the simplest slice of application functionality, it's like the infrastructure is kind of like an icebergy kind of thing. You have to build all this just to get to that. So the more you can do to kind of shrink that.
I might still have scars from looking at application logs in CloudWatch, but it was the right call. Because as you say, like large icebergs, like you have to sort of slice things eventually somewhere. But it's what's interesting is you're talking about these sort of complexities and kind of wrapping around them. And what I'm sort of hearing you talk about is essentially domain modeling and domain-driven design kind of things. Like, and I think that's one of the really interesting things I've found now that I am starting to get to, as Bridget likes to say, a gray braid rather than a gray beard, but is like we often see that this swing of things. When something new comes in, it's like throw away everything we've been doing, go straight to this new thing and almost have to relearn a lot of the same lessons that we've learned previously. And there, I think one of the real special superpowers that you and I have and anyone who's worked in consulting has is seeing patterns across domains so much more quickly than if you are working traditional jobs with 3 to 5 years experience and seeing one domain and then maybe even staying in the same domain at your next job and so on. So with that in mind, you're talking about infrastructure as code evolving. You're talking about new tools, system initiative, and other things. What do you think we can learn from our years of infrastructure as code, our editions of the book on infrastructure as code, our decades of experience that we can apply to make these new models like even faster to be efficient, right? Even faster to be scalable and successful.
Yeah, I think, so what I often think is in addition to us having worked as consultants and so getting exposed to a lot of different organizations and domains is, you know, working at ThoughtWorks, it's primarily a software delivery consultancy. And so it's always been a big focus on software architecture and software delivery approaches. So continuous delivery, microservices and all of that. And I think with infrastructure, it's like it's been so it's like different people doing that. So like infrastructure people, even those who are working with let's say agile software delivery teams, weren't necessarily applying those same concepts, you know, to how they built the environments and all that. And then being able to do that with code then kind of opened opportunities to think about things like automated testing and TDD pipelines and all that kind of stuff. And so I think it's that kind of thing. It's kind of like looking at what are the things that we've learned from software, general software development and architecture and delivery, and how can we bring more of that to bear? And so you mentioned domain-driven design, and that's a perfect example, right? Because it's like one of the things I often like to do on a project is, so first of all, I like working with the teams that are with building the applications and thinking about that, because we're starting at application-driven development. We're starting with that. We're doing, say, maybe the domain modeling for the business domain. And then we kind of start building down from that. Okay, what needs to be in place in terms of, say, technology domains? So, you know, monitoring and availability and storage and these other kind of things. And so you think about those as domains as well, part of the domain model that extends down into from the business capabilities to the technical capabilities. And so then I think that then leads naturally to think about things like, so microservices. So right now, one of the things that people often do with infrastructure as code is they build kind of big projects and maybe they modularize it code wise, but then you still end up with when you run the command to, you know, Terraform apply or what have you, it like can take like, I've seen like an hour, 2 hours for it to, you know, for it to run. And then something breaks halfway through and you're like, it's all hosed. So I think that kind of thing of, can we move away from monolithic deployable units to smaller, whether it's microservices or somewhere in between, but just things that are more, I guess, tractable, which also helps with then doing things like automated testing and with using pipelines and all those kind of things. As with software, right, we found that all of this stuff kind of went together. You can just kind of like, we're going to do TDD and write unit tests for a big spaghetti code base. We had to kind of organize it better and break it down better.
And the injection need to come in. Absolutely.
I think we're still figuring all that out for infrastructure. I think we're still not there yet in terms of how to best make use of this. Because it is like there's a lot of the concepts that apply, but like you have to apply them maybe in different ways. And so I think we're still learning as an industry how to do that well.
So do you think that given infrastructure, and I don't think anyone, I'll start with saying, I don't think anyone would challenge you on that. Like my background is starting in software testing. And I would say that's still a challenge whenever you get into conversation about infrastructure as code is like, what does testing look like? Like, am I testing that my declarative code has done the thing that I declared? Because like in some ways, then you're just testing the framework you're depending on or whatever, right? So there's all sorts of questions about that and the feedback cycles and the cost to both your pocketbook and the environment if you were to create test environments and on every push and all those things. So lots of challenges that are domain specific to infrastructure that when it comes to those auxiliary requirements of delivering code, right? Like testing and so forth. But I'm wondering, given that we haven't actually kind of knocked those on the head, we haven't actually figured out exactly what that looks like in the infrastructure space, like with this influx of code generation through AI and interaction with code via MCP servers and access to more and more of things, do you think that infrastructure is as poised to take advantage of that in a positive way as software would be? Or what do you think would be the challenges there of applying the same sort of thoughts into the infrastructure space?
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting potential with using kind of like LLMs and other kind of AI technologies. I think some of the biggest opportunities we've seen people exploiting are in the kind of troubleshooting and that kind of thing of like, you have all this information to kind of pull together and make sense of. And that's a really interesting area. I think for creating infrastructure, I think, so I know that there can be some kind of naive approaches where it's like, okay, can you make like a chat bot? Again, like we were talking about earlier around moving beyond infrastructure as code, can you just use like chat prompts as infrastructure? Can you just say like, make me a server instance, make me a gateway, you know, and this kind of thing, and have the AI do it for you? And I think there is some, I think that can be useful in some ways as with code, but I think, you know, with software code, but I think there are some things we shouldn't forget. So it's funny. So I was having a look at this, and then I was looking back over the infrastructure as code book and the early chapters, the first couple of chapters where I talk about like principles of infrastructure as code. And I was thinking about, ooh, if you're using AI, you know, are those principles going to apply, or did I, cause I'm like, I was just kind of like, you know, it wasn't that long ago, but it was a long time ago in technology years that I wrote those chapters, you know, it was like probably a year ago I wrote those chapters. But I went back and I found, I think they do hold up pretty well, just in terms of, it's not just about code. It is things like, make sure you can repeat the things that you do. So like when you create your infrastructure in your development environment, say, you want to be able to have the same infrastructure created in a consistent way in each of the further environments, maybe tweaked a bit for things like capacity or what have you. But like, you know, you want to be able to reproduce it. You want to be able to then modify it. Yeah, all those kind of things still apply. So I think when we're looking at how to take advantage of AI, we need to make sure that we don't just do like some code-assisted click ops, you know, or AI-assisted click ops.
Oh, just get into that same cycle of horribleness of, you know, needing to back ourselves out of that, like turn that click ops into something that can be managed, fleet managed, like over scale, and something that can be abstracted in a more effective way, and all those things that we've been really plagued with since always. It's just evolutions of it in technology. So
what I think would be cool, I can, you know, I'm picturing, and so it's going again with these themes of like building up levels of layers of abstraction and stuff and components that people can use. So I could, you know, for like a developer, again, working on, okay, I've got this application I'm building and it's going to need a database, for instance, and selecting the component and how to configure it. So like, again, you don't want to have to kind of build it from the ground up, but as a developer, like you don't want to have to think about that, right? You know, you're not doing anything really kind of groundbreaking, but there are some things that you do care about. So you might care about, what kind of data am I going to be storing in the database? Is it going to have like personal information? So does it need to have like, you know, things around it for compliance and security and those kind of things? How durable does it need to be in terms of backups? Does it need to be, is it okay to back it up once a day, or is it going to be the kind of thing that needs to be backed up continuously? How transactional is it? Like how much, you know, so there's things that like you kind of ought to know as a developer to be able to specify. And so you can give like components. So what I think in terms of code is, it's like, if you build components that like have, those are the configurable options, because those are the things that you care about, that'd be cool. And then where AI can come into that is kind of like coaching you on that, right? So it's like, oh, I need to add a database now. And the AI can be like asking you these questions. It might just ask you like, oh, what are you going to store in it? What are you going to use it for? What's it look like? And ask, you know, kind of guided questions to help select the right options. Or might even like look at your code base and say, hey, I see you're storing some personal information here. I think you ought to use this, you know? So I can see some places where it could be quite useful and quite, you know, quite helpful to people. But I think it has to come in again in this context of thinking about how you're designing and building infrastructure and making the kind of different layers available to for different
and of your business, right? Like whether or not you are in Europe, you're going to handle personal information differently than in America, or and so on. So these things can't be just generic AIs either. There are currently, I'm working with them. I'm working with businesses that are building their internal platforms to be able to manage the infrastructure in such a way that is business specific rather than just generic to the cloud, generic to AI, and so on. But what I love that every time I get in a room and chat with you is that you and I are nerds. Like we get straight down into the tin, as you might say. We both work in the infrastructure space and pretty opsy back-end side of things. But like, actually, when you think back over this conversation, and I think back over our many years of conversations, like so much of it has very little to do with the tech, and it has to do with the world around the tech. And I think that's why we both have been attracted to become Team Topologies advocates and be engaged in the Team Topologies world, which is looking at that wider aspect. So talk to me a little bit about, like, you know, we haven't worked together in a few years. What does today look like for you when you're working with clients and you're in different engagements? Like, how much are you working on architecture and business architecture and what that might look like versus, you know, infrastructure architecture? How do those two worlds meet in your experience?
Yeah, I think it's So it's a big emphasis for me these days is making sure that we have the space to talk about that, that we connect it, because I think there is still this idea that, well, infrastructure is just like plumbing. It's just like, you know, so as a business, like, we're not here to build infrastructure. Like, infrastructure is a means to an end. And so it doesn't, you know, and we would like it to be like a utility, that we don't have to care about it. And I see kind of both on the kind of business leadership side and then on the kind of technologist side, that belief kind of leading to issues where, like, the technologists are like, I'm just going to build the infrastructure. I don't need to worry about what's running on it. It's just standard infrastructure. I'm going to make landing zones that look like this. It's the same thing I did at a completely different company, and it's just going to look the same. And then it's not my problem if people getting, you know, trying to make stuff run on it. And then you get the business people saying, oh, I don't really care about that. I just want to kind of, like, you know, I just will kind of have it available. But then you get all the kind of pain that comes from, you know, it's like, well, you know, you get the business people, when I talk to them, it's like, why am I always having to worry about infrastructure? Why is it always in the way? Why is it always taking so long to, like, set up new environments? Developers are always complaining they don't have access to, you know, or to test or whatever. And it's, I think it's because that those conversations aren't happening. And I think we need to have this recognition that there is a connection from the business value down to what's going on with the infrastructure. And I think that layer of where you can kind of treat it like a utility is much lower than we think. It's basically at the cloud layer, right? This is what, you know, AWS and Azure and all the other kind of cloud providers, they have found this is what we can provide, wrap an API around it and not care about what you're doing on top of it, right? And then I think we like to think that, oh, you can just have a platform that you deploy on top of it, a PaaS or whatever, and then, you know, buy one off the shelf and drop it in, and then our developers can use it for whatever. And it's like, well, there's a reason why we have platform engineering now, and why we have, you know, we've had DevOps, and we had, like, you know, people talk about developer experience, and why this is such a massive thing. And we keep finding new names for it, new ways to kind of tackle at it. It's because it still isn't, you know, your business still needs to think about it. You still need to think about, for your business, what's the right stuff and what you're trying to do for your domain. Like, what are the variations on that? It isn't generic at that level. And so, yeah. So I think that's what I spend a lot of my time doing, is trying to persuade people who, like, maybe are asking me to come in, oh, can you help sort out our infrastructure for us? It's too slow. And then go away and do that. It's like, okay, no, you're going to need to come in the room with me and sit down, and everybody's going to need to talk about it together and work it out.
Yeah. I mean, I started, as I said, my career as a QA, and the number of people who said, we just need you to come in and write some automated tests. And I'd get there and be like, what? That is not the problem. let's talk about that. But no, I think what you're getting at is something that I actually wrote something about, which is, like, platform internal teams have to worry about what is unique to their business, and they can't just take from the cloud, but they can sort of optimize across their business, right? So that is across teams. And I think Gregor Hope says the same thing. It's that the platform is your business tech layer, right? Like, I think that there's a lot of that is starting to solidify in more reusable language, and team topology is part of creating that language and allowing us to actually identify those patterns, which I think has been super powerful. So, unfortunately, I think we are starting to get to our time today. I know that it's been really fun to catch up with you and all the hard work you've put into the third edition. I can see the evolutions across them as I've been a reviewer of these, and really love to see how we're continuing to grow in infrastructure as code. So, congratulations on yet another refresh. Is there any last things you want to share with people before we say goodbye for now?
I guess not really, but other than, you know, feel free to reach out on, you know, LinkedIn and what have you. And I'm always interested in talking with people around the challenges that they're having and the things that they're doing. I, you know, the reason I can write these books is because I'm learning from other people, right? It's not, I can't come up with this stuff on my own. So I'm always happy to chat with people.
Amazing. And I can vouch he's a very friendly guy. So please do reach out. It benefits the whole community, right? When we find ways to amplify people's stories. So thank you again, Keith, for sharing all of those stories and your knowledge in the books and here today on this podcast. So thank you so much.
Yeah. Thanks, Abby. And thanks to the GoTo folks.
Yes, absolutely.
Letting us do this.
Thank you all.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the GoTo podcast. Head over to gotopia.tech to discover lots more content from the brightest minds in software development.